it's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
Did you hear my dogs got busted?
Your dogs got busted?
They got busted.
By who?
2 days in jail.
Your doggies got taken away for 2 days?
2 days.
Exactly what they do. They barked did they bite?
No, they didn't bite. They were doing drugs.
Your doggies were doing drugs?
Doing drugs. Got sent to the big house.
You're going to have to explain that. I really can't follow you.
Unbelievable. Well, we're up with my dad.
Sierra's smoking a doobie. Is that why she's just laid out the way she is?
Yeah, Sierra. I thought you said Sarah there for a minute. Yeah, that was it. That was the problem. No, we were up seeing my dad going through little surgery stuff he's going through up in San Francisco. And we had a house sitter down here with our dogs, and she calls us at 1 o'clock in the morning. Your dogs have overdosed on some drugs. And we'd gotten a package of one of our dogs has hip dysplasia real bad. So we'd gotten drugs for her in the mail in one of these plastic-wrapped, you know, those kind of envelopes that are almost impossible
and
to get into.
And she bit into that?
And it was in there in a plastic case, 60 pills of this painkiller. And, yeah, on our house sitter was gone. The dog ripped it off the counter, ripped the package open, chewed the lid off the pills, and took 60 of them. Well, we don't know how many she took, actually. We thought that she would largely be the culprit. She's done this before. She recently pulled off
the one-ear trick.
An M&M dispenser from off the counter and bit all the plastic pieces off.
Chocolate is not good for dogs either.
To get to the M&Ms inside. So now everything chocolate is up higher than a dog can reach in our house. And now we.
So you don't have to baby-proof your house for your little grandchildren. You have to
dog-proof it for Sheba. But no, the dogs.
M&Ms and pills.
The dogs had taken a huge overdose. They were put on emergency IVs. We're out of town. My dad's.
They passed out?
No, they weren't passed out.
They were swaying.
They were breathing heavy, and she didn't know what to do. So 1 in the morning, we call my daughter. She comes over here and gets our dogs. They both take them into the emergency. And then in the morning, they got Sierra out because they thought Sierra's the older dog, 13. Probably she didn't get any. They found the bottle cap in Sheba's stomach when they evacuated her stomach. And so they send Sierra home, but within an hour, she's just puking her guts up. So they rushed her back, and they spent 2 days in the big house for doing
wow.
drugs.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the whole idea of trying to grab something that might be good for you before it's time and taking too much, kind of like our economy.
You're making a principle out of this, aren't you? That's a segue.
Kind of like our economy,
segway.
Huh?
You know? Yeah, gracious.
Like Wachovia is going down, WAMU just got snagged. I mean, we haven't hit these kind of financial things ever.
Well, you got to go back to 1929 or 30 or whatever.
Yeah, but I think this even escalates beyond that. This is at a wider dimension. Yes, that was a full crash, but this is institutions are absolutely failing. I got friends that are in the investment banker stuff, and they're saying, yeah, this is just absolutely historic. And they were telling me that 2 weeks ago before largely this landed on the news.
It's obviously historic, and they say folks overseas are just loving it.
Well, it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like they're getting crunched, too.
Well, they're gonna pay some, but the whole idea is the big power's going down. It's just like the fancy rich kid who wanders around town, gets his comeuppance. People enjoy that.
I tell you, I think we took one too many pills, and we're swaying and wheezing.
Well, the other argument is not to make...
Breathing heavy.
Not to make pills that are chewable by dogs flavored like beef. That would probably be the thing. If you don't want dogs to overdose...
Sort of like low-interest rates in the housing market. There you go. I think that's beef-flavored housing mortgages.
Well, the whole idea of how we did that, the whole subprime mortgage thing, people buying homes they couldn't afford on inflated... home prices, and now it's pay the piper time.
It's so weird that it's like there's this sense that no, we must perpetuate the illusion. Our economy is built on it.
It's exactly
credit is the lifeblood with which our economy flows, and we have the world's best economy on the planet.
Do you hear what that means?
It's all fake.
Living beyond your means is essential to the economy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Neither you or I are financial experts.
Well, that's for
okay.
sure.
But you look at the reality of what's going on, and it's like I tend to think that at some point, the market can no longer sustain its own illusion, and it has a tendency to sort of restrict back to reality.
Boy, you're scaring the economists to death. You know that, don't you?
I understand it, but it's like I don't think you can keep feeding it illusions. I don't think you can do anything like that.
What they're saying is our whole economy runs on the illusion. So if you let it go under, there's hell to pay.
I don't know. I've had the sneaking suspicions for a long time. I mean, I've honestly thought about this for about a decade, where you just go like, gosh, there's one reason the stock market always does scare me, is because it's not based upon actual assets and genuine wealth.
It's perception.
It's all perception, and that's why it can fly up and
down.
So is
the housing market. Exactly the same problem.
Exactly. But there is a reality. There is a baseline within actual some material goods. You can go, those can fluctuate a little bit, but they're still based on something. So much of the stock market isn't based on much of – that's where their margins come in. They have very tiny assets to leverage this supposed great wealth. I sat there going, how can billionaires overnight lose half their wealth if it's real? Where did it go? It just went away. It's not that it was real. It was all perceived. And I just go like, gosh, I have a perspective on the kingdom and the king in that kingdom that just says, I don't think you can get that far from what reality is and make it last. You just can't. You can't live in a perpetual illusion. And if that's what our economy is, it's destined to fail.
And in some sense, it needs to. There needs to be a resetting.
Yes, things, reality.
Things need to collapse.
Yeah.
But, and well, it's
and
be
that's
hardship.
Not bad
and,
news.
It, well, to some people, to the lie.
It's
of,
a rude awakening.
To the lie of a society, yeah, that's lived on. Man, I get my share. You get your share. We all eat. We drive nice cars. We
we'll mortgage
have soccer
future
games
generations.
All. I mean, our economy is built on such consumeristic indulgence that if people pull back from that stuff, what they're saying is this thing collapses, then that business collapses, that shipping thing, that retail outlet, and all of a sudden nobody's doing anything that makes money and everybody's looking for handouts to eat. I mean, back to the 1930s.
Okay, but in my own little microcosm,
I grew up in the 30s.
Okay. you might, but I was not even a thought back then. I look at the dynamics. My own little world has crumbled a couple of times over, where what I was doing all of a sudden, and it was providing for me, all of a sudden abruptly stopped and it about changed. And I'm going like, look, as far as my own stock market crash, I've experienced a couple of those where all of a sudden you're just like, this is dramatic, this is terrifying. And I guess part of me has just recognized the fear that consumes all of that, which is what causes this plunge. If we could sort of have a society that wasn't profited upon, you think it's just how fear basically the entire insurance industry, I mean everything. There's so many of this stuff that just going like, gosh, I wonder if this thing actually reset to reality. And then we built upon reality from there. It says in Hebrews that everything that can be shaken will be shaken so that we get to an unshakable kingdom. And I'm just going like, that seems to me to be something solidly built on reality. And that's what characterizes God's construction.
Right.
I look at this and I go like, well, even if we postpone this as long as we possibly could, I do think it's inevitable.
The day of reckoning has to come at some point.
At some point.
And I don't know how. If you can prop up enough illusion now with everything falling apart that is, all the bad loans that are out there.
So you can grow it to an even worse precipice. That's the thing I sit there. It's like, okay, so say we perpetuate a little longer. We're not bringing it to reality.
No, that's true. That's the downside of a democracy. Once pigs know they can vote themselves food in the trough. And our founders said stuff like that. The problem with a democracy is it demands a certain amount of self-responsibility. That is
which
all,
seems to have been left. That's been left in the ditch.
We have lost that a long time ago. Because what goes hand in hand with illusion is corruption. And all the corruption of the money guys that have just lied, did whatever to prop their fake businesses up to make all kinds of money, take a $160 million golden parachute and retire in economic bliss, those guys need to be hauled into the big house along with Sheba and Sierra. They had a whole different kind of addiction. I'm telling you what, the corruption in our government, the corruption in our economic leaders, that's what has driven this. It is delusion, certainly, but illusion walk once you start lying.
Illusion based on self-interest. I mean, you take
never
a government-based. What if this happened in February or March? Not pre-November.
Oh, yeah. Not an election year.
Yeah, you're sitting there going like, what would have been done then? And perhaps at the front of a four-year term. I wonder if we wouldn't, because the governing powers are not in that reelected moment, have to I just wonder what this would be like. There'd still be the self-interest.
It wouldn't be any different because our culture, Ryan, this is what people really don't know and don't believe. As I work with bridge builders and I've been in D.C. and I've been behind the corridors of power with various people, our society is a set of haves. That upper 5% make lots of money, have the power of the culture, political influence, whatever, and there's the have-nots. And at times like this, no one cares about the have-nots. It's propping up and protecting the haves.
Oh, man.
And that, you know,
we're getting my blood to boil.
Oh, I'm telling you, we think we've got this leveled society, the democracy, everybody's treated fairly. There are people who are treated and live like the rules do not exist. And only when they get caught is that a problem. The illusion, you're not in trouble for doing it when you're dumb enough to get caught. And take this into some of the systems that I've lived in with, you know, church systems and whatever. When if you get caught with sexual sin, if you get caught in some kind of horrible lie, then we have to kill you. It's not that other people aren't doing it. It's not that other people aren't struggling with those things. You're dumb enough for getting caught. And that's where the great accountability load comes in. We've got to hold people accountable. And that's the same thing here. Until there is, from our government, I think if there's any time in America where you would say, look, let's have an anti-incumbency vote. This is not about just the stock market. This is not about just subprime loans. This is our legislators have let this happen for 10, 12, 20 years. And until you finally say, look, you got to throw the bums out and try and get new bums in there, or at least people will care about the culture, we're just kidding ourselves. We're going to, you know, our Congress has a 22% approval rating and a 95% reelection rate. What does that tell you?
That we're stupid.
Yeah, that our Congress provides my district enough cash. I'll put my guy back in because he's getting me good stuff. The other guys, they're all corrupt. The fact is, they are all corrupt.
I mean, I look at this and just go like, when do you start thinking about what's in everyone's best interest? Not just this generation, but the next generation.
Yes. Yeah.
And if the decision we're making is not undergirding that conclusion, it's a bad decision.
Yeah, and getting back to your point earlier, if it's not based on reality, if we're going to keep doing everything we can to prop up an illusion,
right,
and we're not going to let things reset. If my property, I don't care what I paid for it, it's worth something. Well, it needs to reset to that worth something. I'm telling you, it wasn't worth what I paid for it in the high priced California subprime when I was dumb enough to buy this house. It wasn't worth that much. It's not worth that much today. It's not going to be worth that much 5 years from now. But if there isn't the generation at which reality resets, if we're going to keep pushing off that day of reckoning, the day of reckoning is going to
be
worse.
Even worse. I mean, I grew up with that Fram oil filter. You know, you pay me now or pay me later. Part of me is going like, pay now. Always pay now.
We're hoping to die first. And then what we're really doing is saying to our kids and grandkids, you're going to have to shoulder all that. We were dumb enough. My generation, the last two presidents we've had from my generation have really horrible disasters.
Yeah, it's interesting.
They're both from two different parties. That's not even a partisan comment. They're both disasters.
It's across the aisle. It's totally across the aisle. Yeah. It's interesting when you've traveled a little bit, especially by car, our country, and you look at some of the great highway systems in the middle of nowhere. You're just going like in the middle of nowhere. There's a highway. Who in the world put that there? There was a generation that built that. There's a generation that dug those tunnels. There's a generation that looked at that mountain and went through that mountain. And you're just going like, gosh, our great highway systems are in such profound disrepair. We can't even find the money to fix the potholes. And you're just going like, yeah, but there's a generation that built that, that didn't need that, but they saw a vision for the future and they invested themselves and worked towards that. And you just go like, that's insane. That is what I think made America, if America was great, that is part of what did make some of that great.
If America was great, now we're talking. No, if it was.
No, but
they've always been
but
an illusion.
We have an international audience.
Boy,
so
we're
going to
get nailed on this podcast. I'm telling you, people are going to have fun with this one.
But you look at that and it's like, I marvel at some of those things that were built by a generation and you just go like, gosh, we're reaping the reward and dividend of what someone else did. That's amazing. That's just amazing. Wow. That there would be that kind of sacrifice. The expense that wasn't just for them. And then I look at our current climate and culture is we're borrowing from future generations so I can have my goodies now. And you just go like, there's no sacrifice. They're stealing.
So I can drive my SUV and my Hummer around the planet.
I like Hummers, but I don't like the gas mileage.
Oh, and I think, again, if you want to go back to the Christian argument, have we been on the wrong side of this argument, like so many of them, the whole Christian culture? Even if you just want to get into stewardship for the earth. You know, even if there is no such thing as global warming, and I don't want to get into the argument. I mean, scientists say there is. Scientists say there isn't. It's human caused, not human caused. It's just an aberration of climate. It's not. Even if
there's
not,
still responsible living.
All the thing on the green side of this is how do we save resources for our future children? How do we not use up every? And it's the difference between a farmer who's going to plant a crop for next fall and pigs at the trough just saying, keep dumping it in here because I'm just slapping it all up. And I do think that's a great, from the last 40 years to now, that's
pigs
a great,
in the parlor, I tell you.
This is all about consumerism, self-indulgence. And I know people are scared. I know people are going to say jobs, their income, their housing. If people, people are living in a house that's worth twice what they owe on it. And people are being foreclosed on because they, at some point, you just say, it's stupid for me to pay for a house that's not worth that price. Why should I even be paying for it? It's people walking away from their loans. And it really does say where, I mean, the thing back to the unshakable kingdom, where am I going to find my security in this thing?
Yeah, see.
Because is my security in the Congress, the United States government? Is my security in Wall Street? Where is it really? This is a good time to find out because you may be finding out next year anyway.
This is a pay me now moment as opposed to pay it later. It just always is more expensive later.
Well, you hope it's a pay me now moment. It's not likely to be.
I don't know that it doesn't seem like that's where this is shaping up. It seems like they're going to postpone it now later.
We're going to buy our way into a new illusion. We are.
And it's like, you know, I think we ought to print a whole bunch of those gratefully disillusioned shirts. And we're probably going to have to give them away because no one will be able to buy them. But the reality is I think I've already in different areas of my life experienced that sense of, ooh, painful, emotionally disorienting, and yet ultimately beneficial, because now it is less shakable. I wouldn't say that my life is unshakable foundation. I'd say Jesus is my unshakable rock, right. And I love the idea and the wisdom of letting life go through its earthquakes and its rumblings so that at each juncture, I'm becoming more and more secure in him and what reality is. I don't want to have, I don't want to think more highly of myself than I ought. I don't want to try to value myself more than I ought.
Good.
I mean, when you look at this.
I don't want you to either.
Thank you. I have you to help me.
I will help you.
Thank you. I love that. That's why I enjoy our friendship.
I have the gift of humility exportation.
I do. And you import it quite a bit. Thank you.
Export, not import.
Okay.
Export.
But I look at that and just like, gosh, as opposed to living in the illusion of the comfort, I would just as soon figure out wherever I don't have an accurate picture, I just soon have a much more accurate picture because then the fear dissipates. If I know what something is and there isn't a bunch of illusions, there's not a whole lot for me to be afraid of.
Yeah.
The what-ifs are gone. It's the what-is. And if I'm secure in the what is, it's like, you know, I love the guy. I love the fact that God's name is I am who I am, as opposed to if. You know.
What if?
What if? But I think so many people relate on a conditional dynamic, and there's a ton of anxiety there. If I'll do this, then maybe God will love me. If I'll do this, then maybe it'll turn out right. If I will buy into God's financial prosperity system, and I'm going to go send a whole bunch of money right now to all these preachers because that will somehow ensure that I will not be affected by this looming recession. And it's like, really? Okay.
Illusions are everywhere, aren't they? Illusions
yes.
are everywhere. And people make a lot of money off people's fears and people's illusions.
Yeah.
What I have loved most about this journey the last 12, 14 years of learning God's life and love and walking in relationship with Him as opposed to trying to get God to control everything around me, I've noticed that that the distance by which I live my perspective used to be, you know, this 3-year, 5-year plan, strategizing how I get there. I've watched that roll back more and more. Last few years I've been talking about that whole Matthew 6, each day has enough grace for its own. Don't borrow off tomorrow's
stuff.
Give
us this day our daily bread.
That's where God best makes himself known, is me living in what is today, not what I'd like things to be, not how I can get God to change my circumstances, but take whether it's in a hospital with my dad in San Francisco, which is not a good time for me to be making, but dad's
right.
illness wasn't scheduled for my best convenience. It wasn't. I was up there last week, and then I had to be in Visalia this weekend to do some speaking, and my dad wasn't critical enough to cancel that, so I came down to Visalia, and then we found out about the dogs. Sarah hitches a ride, almost literally. Somebody offers to drive her down here because my daughter and our house sitter didn't want them to think they were responsible for all these medical decisions. So Sarah shoots down here. I stayed in town to do a seminar thing, spoke the next Sunday morning. I could tell you about the place I spoke at. It was hilarious. But anyway, spoke this place Sunday morning, and then I'm getting people asking, what are you going to do? Because I'm wrestling with, do I need to go back to San Francisco to be with my father? Do I need to drive to L.A. and be with Sarah and sort the dog situation out here? And I didn't have a clue. And people are saying, at Sunday morning deal, they're going, where are you going after this? I don't have a clue. I've got 8 miles of freeway driving out of Visalia until I get to the 99.
Yeah, and then you turn right or left.
And some of those 8 miles, I'm going to make a decision. I'm either going north to be with Dad, or I'm going south to be with Sarah and the dogs and the family and Sarah's birthday, and we had some things this weekend. And pretty much that was the choice. Just driving down there, calling my mom, getting an update from the hospital, calling Sarah, getting an update from her. And it was really fun going, you know what, I'm not even living a day at a time anymore. I'm kind of like finding grace for 8 miles. What does the next 8 miles tell me what to do? And there's, you know, a lot of people say, gosh, are you worried during Sunday morning? Are you nervous? Should you be? Going, you know what, I'm not going to know that till about 12:15. And I don't have to know it at 8:30. I don't have to know it at 10:45. I'm going to make a decision at 12:15. That's when I need to know. And by 12:15, I knew. I knew things were set in San Francisco. I turned home, came home, spent the time with Sarah and the family, and then went back to San Francisco this week to spend some more time with my dad. So I love the grace that says it is what it is.
Yes.
My deal isn't, oh, gosh, of all the stupid weekends from my – this is the old Wayne. I'm telling you, I could see it. My dad's sick. I got to be speaking. You couldn't watch my dogs on Friday and make sure they didn't eat some stupid – I mean, I can imagine all the tirade I would have leveled at God. I'm doing your stuff. Couldn't you watch my dogs for me? And I'm not even having those thoughts. I'm just going – it is what it is. I got a sick dad in San Francisco. I got sick dogs in Los Angeles. I don't know the dogs are going to survive.
That has been a repeated mantra in my own brain. You know, it is what it is. I've recognized the stupidity of wasting time wishing that things were different than they are.
We've spent so much time.
And it's just like, you know what? It's just, what's the point of that emotion? I'm not living in denial. No,
right.
I don't like this right now. I'm very aware of. I don't like this.
I would love God to change it, and I don't mind asking him to change it.
I'm happy to ask. If he does it, I still have to make decisions that being all freaked out about it is not going to help. Having a big pouty attitude about it is not going to help. It's just a matter of what is reality, how best to respond to that. And
what sight do I have today?
Yeah, and it's like, I don't think any of this is taking God by surprise. I don't think he's like, oh, scurrying around the angelic host in heaven going, oh, did you see? Wayne's got this issue. Or Brad's got this. It's I think God will give me the wisdom I need to know. And when he's silent and I'm unsure, that's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of sit there. It's like, yeah. You know what? If I'm watching over my children and I'm watching as they live their lives and I'm going like, okay, I'm not intervening at every moment. I'm not making all the decisions for them at every juncture. Why? Because they're growing through carrying some of this as their decision-making responsibility. I will step in and say, have you considered? Have you thought about this? If all of a sudden it looks like they're going to make a seriously dumb move, I do ask a more pointed, firm question, and they, oh, am I in trouble? No, no. I'm just letting you know. I don't think that's really where you... Well, I'm not so sure you really... I mean, I look at that. If that's just the relational aspect of how I would think most everyone would agree, that's pretty decent parenting.
Yeah.
If God is growing us up and conforming me to the image of his own son, if he has given me, quote, the mind of Christ, and... maybe I'm supposed to use it. That living in harmony and dialogue really ought to be able to remove a lot of the fear. It won't remove all the uncertainty.
Yep.
But it will remove the anxiety surrounding it. There's only a limited number of things that are in my control. There's a whole bunch of others that I think are in his.
And I think Jesus' point, Matthew 6, Luke 12, where he's talking about, hey, don't be anxious for tomorrow. Just, you know, walk in the reality. God knows what's going on. He's taking care of you. A bird can't fall from the sky and God doesn't know it. And just live is that God's easier to see as we embrace him in the as is than when we think he's abandoned us in the as is. The as is proves he doesn't care about me and doesn't love me or he would have fixed it by now. None of those things lead you to a place of grace. None of it leads to a place of, right. I see, God, what you're doing in this. We had this little serendipitous thing at the hospital Friday night. I was back up there. My dad had surgery on Thursday. This is Thursday night. My dad had surgery on Thursday, and I flew up there to be with him. This is second major surgery in 2 weeks. It's to repair a botched surgery. It's very serious. He may not live through this. And in fact, at one point before the surgery, they were wanting to put a feeding tube in him. He was going, no. We said we weren't doing this. And Mom comes in and says, I'm dying. They're wanting to put the feeding tube in me. And I thought we agreed not to do this. She said, I don't think you're dying. Let's go check it out. And what they wanted, to put some nourishment in there before surgery, kind of pump him up. And so he finally understood that. But we got talking about this week after he got out of the second surgery. And he's feeling better. He's up in a chair. And I looked at him. I said, so were you afraid of dying? He said, are you kidding? I was praying to die. I was afraid of living. He was... That's a great way to look at it. He was in such pain.
I was about to get out of it. The rocket ride.
I was not afraid of dying. I was afraid of living. And now he's had a relapse last night. We're not sure where this is going to go with my dad. But we were sitting there on Thursday night after the surgery. And this young lady walks in and she said, hi, I'm Grace and I'm your nurse for this evening. And I thought,
oh, what a cool
thing.
No,
that's cool. And so we had Grace all night long. The next morning, another gal walks in as we got in the hotel. I got my mom back to the hospital. The nurse walks in and says, hi, I'm Hope, and I'll be replacing Grace today. I blogged on this a little bit. How cool is this? They go from Grace to Hope, and then...
What's next? Who's on rotation?
Grace came back that night, and I was hoping Joy would come in the morning, but we didn't get Joy in the morning. We got Hope again. We had a great time. Great nurses, great names for nurses. And I blogged on that a little bit, and I got a response to my blog. Somebody commented, you know, I've had an illness for 4 or 5 years, and very painful, evidently, and God never does this thing for me. God never puts little things in my life, and they just, and I, my heart just, that's almost why I didn't put that blog up there. I knew there'd be somebody who would read it and go,
feel left out.
I've never had a nurse named Grace. I've never had a nurse named Hope. So obviously God doesn't care about me. And it really wasn't my point, My point was, when you're in the moment with God, instead of trying to get God to change the moment and feeling abandoned when he doesn't. And I know people, we've known incredible crisis and pain in our family. My brother died of multiple sclerosis. My wife's father, let's be clear. My wife's father had Parkinson's for 42 years, and they were into the whole faith teacher thing, sure. Gave all kinds of money, praying for healing, trying to get that change. It never did. I don't have answers for that. I know God heals. I've seen God heal people of MS. I've seen God heal people of Parkinson's. I know he heals. I know I get to pray for that, right. But I don't get a vote on that. I don't get the deciding vote on that.
Right.
But when you embrace God in the moment, this is God here, now. How is he making himself known? And not feeling rejected. If this whole economy goes sideways and needs to reset and there's... You know what? Suffering is not going to ruin my children. The fact that they may not get anything to watch on their big screen TV, or they can't put enough gas in the car to drive to Disneyland every 2 months, it's not the end of the world for them. There, you know, so much of our society is not built on substance. It's built on luxury. And part of that illusion, I mean, even after 9/11, oh, we're at war with the terrorists. Keep shopping because you got to keep the economy. Remember that? It wasn't, let's go on war footing. Let's really act like we're in a war. No, let's run up another $400 trillion in debt while we go overseas and blow up stuff we think we can blow up. And you guys, keep shopping. We need you shopping. We need you buying more TVs, more computers.
I'm doing my part in the war effort.
You know how much every family in America, not every, there's some that are really in poverty, I understand that, but most middle-class Americans could cut back half their budget. The way we eat, the way clothes we wear, the entertainments we indulge ourselves in, you could cut it by half. And you know what? I remember when Sarah and I were married, living in this little apartment, making almost nothing. We weren't any happier today than we were then. It was fun. We had each other. We had life. I really do think maybe it's time, and I'm not prophesying anything because I don't know. I think our government will find a way to prop this up and keep the debt going. But at some point of reckoning, the scripture is clear, an economic disaster is coming on the world. And at that time, you're going to find, is my security in that bank account, in my assessment on my home, or is it in him?
Well, I think that this is a moment that invites us. For just self-reflection, what am I building on? Who is my foundation? And I think the exhortation of the scriptures is that guy is supposed to be Jesus. And if you're with him, that's regardless of what's going on, that's probably the safest place to be. So if I focus on the primacy of relationship, if there's anything that I need to know, I think he'll tell me. I don't think he's going to leave me in the dark. And I think even if it gets dark, there's somebody's hand I can hold who will walk me through to tomorrow.
And walking me through to tomorrow doesn't mean I won't hurt, won't suffer, won't go through hard times. But going through those things with him will change us.
Yeah.
And will allow us to love other people in the process. That's that thing we keep trying to avoid. And we keep propping up with all these false illusions. We've said time and again, religion is an illusion. It's a whole illusion about God that doesn't work when the real God works.
Yeah.
Our economy is an illusion that the government is going, you know, that duct tape show we did a long time back.
Yeah.
Boy, you can see they're just passing out rolls of duct tape in Congress. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We got a gate for all over here.
And we're sitting here looking at large financial institutes are failing because these guys wrote bad loans. I remember being in Omaha. Omaha? Yeah, it was Omaha.
Mutual.
In February. I was on a plane flying in there. I was sitting next to a guy who's a mortgage broker. And this was right at the beginning of the subprime thing kind of coming unraveled. I said, you guys get nervous? And he works for one of the major banks. He looked at me and he said, we didn't write one subprime loan. And I said, what? He said, we looked at it and said, this is going to be bad. This is going to be horrible. This financial institution didn't write one. He said, did we give up a lot of profits in the last 3 years? To people who were lying and cheating, yes, we did. But right now, they're touted as one of the banks. If you want to move your money to a safe bank, it's that bank. And I know everybody's going to write me saying, what bank is that? I don't feel like it's my responsibility to tell you. So don't write me that email. But it's one of those that's being touted as, why? Because it didn't join the illusion.
Yeah.
Did it lose a lot in the process? Yes. Did other financial institutions say, you're an idiot, man. Everybody else is doing it. You should be doing it. Yes. But now they have their integrity. They also have your money now if you're with them. They also have that. And people they loan money to can actually afford their homes because they didn't lie to them and say, oh, it doesn't matter. No one else can afford their home either. We'll just give you a loan and it'll be worth it. It'll grow. It'll be fine. Don't worry about it. Instead of, you know, and I hope what you said is true. I hope that people are finding that the kingdom of Jesus is an unshakable kingdom. Disease doesn't destroy it. Economic disaster doesn't destroy it. War on terror doesn't destroy it. The unshakable kingdom is what Jesus come establish on the earth. And unfortunately, it's not the United States of America or the Republic of Ireland or anything else out there. It's in Him.
Yeah.
And Him alone.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.